May it please the Court. Your Honors, James Tunick on behalf of Julio Cesar Sanchez. Julio Cesar Sanchez was an El Salvador national. He was charged with violating the Alien Reentry Statute, 8 U.S.C. Section 1326, illegally reentering into the United States after having been previously deported and convicted of a felony, actually an aggravated felony. When he was previously deported, when Mr. Sanchez was previously deported, he was supposed to have been deported to El Salvador. That was what the immigration judge found, a deportation to El Salvador. Unfortunately, as a result of a mistake by the Department of Homeland Security, he was deported to the border of the United States and Mexico.
And he stayed there? He didn't go to El Salvador?
He did not go to El Salvador, Your
Honor. Why did he stay in Mexico?
Judge, I don't think you can actually go to El Salvador from Mexico. You have to pass through, I think it's Guatemala. He didn't have the identification.
Well, I understand. You could certainly fly over Guatemala to El Salvador. What do you mean?
Oh, assuming he had some money, Your Honor, he was in custody. I don't know the actual reasons. There wasn't any evidence of the reasons why he didn't make it to El Salvador. I would suggest to the court that he probably didn't possess the proper travel documents to make it to El Salvador, but there was no evidence.
Is he a citizen of El Salvador?
Yes, he's a citizen of El Salvador. He's an El Salvador national. And that was...
But you say he couldn't afford to go there?
Well, Judge, he was in custody...
In prison in Mexico?
No. He was in prison in the United States.
Sent to Mexico.
Correct.
And you're saying he's an El Salvadorian, but there's no way he can get from Mexico to El Salvador?
It's very possible that there was no evidence regarding that at the trial, Judge. I can't really cite outside the record.
That's fine.
I don't know the circumstances of that.
How are you going to get around 8 U.S.C. Section 1101?
Judge, that's really a very simple answer. I think the language of that section itself states that for the purpose of this chapter, any alien ordered deported or removed who has left the United States.
And he left when he went to Mexico.
Well, right? He didn't leave. That section was enacted. He was taken by the United States authorities. He was deported or removed. That section was enacted, basically, and the courts have construed it, when someone leaves the United States voluntarily before an order of deportation is entered, then that section was enacted, basically, to prevent them from arguing that they weren't deported, that 8 U.S.C. 1326 doesn't apply to them. That's for people who left the United States.
But it doesn't say they have to go back to their country of origin to satisfy them.
Correct. And I would just say that I did take a look at that language, and the courts have found this language to be relevant to the issue of aliens who depart while deportation order is pending, but the order is not final for some reason. Such as being stayed during an appeal, and that's United States versus Ramirez-Carcamo. It's not cited in either of the...
What difference does it make, even if you're right that the statute is ambiguous, why would you interpret it to give him this break? I mean, what difference does it make whether he's in Mexico or El Salvador?
Well, Judge...
He comes back to the United States illegally.
Because... The Supreme Court has, in Mendoza-Lopez, has basically carved out an exception to the statute. It stated that in Mendoza-Lopez, they were trying to have collaterally attack the deportation order, and the Supreme Court said, okay, Congress does not allow for collateral attack on the deportation order at a trial. You can't collaterally attack the deportation order at trial, but what they did say that doesn't end our inquiry. If the statute, meaning 8 U.S.C. 1326, envisions that a court may impose a criminal penalty for reentry after any deportation, regardless of how violative of the rights of the alien, the deportation proceeding does not comport with the constitutional requirements of due process. This has all basically come out of the Mendoza-Lopez decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. It didn't prevent people from collaterally attacking the prior deportation order, but it did allow for, not to say that every deportation order.
I don't understand. The person is ordered deported, and what 1326 says is, if you're ordered deported, if you've been ordered to be deported, and then you leave, and then you come back, then, you know, it's a crime. What's unclear about that?
If the prior deportation order or deportation proceeding...
Ridiculous. Person's ordered deported. So before he's... instead of reporting to be put on a plane somewhere, he just leaves the country, and then he jumps... Then he comes back in. That, in your view, is legal.
No, Judge, it's not legal. It's not... It was a question we were...
There's no sanction for it, on your view.
They were trying to present to a jury.
Look, I don't understand. What's the sense of it? Someone is ordered deported. Instead of having his plane ticket paid for him by the government or something like that, he walks across the border. And now you say he can come back in, and he there's no punishment for him.
That's not what we're saying, Judge. He didn't.
What is the sanction for someone who does that?
The sanction is a prosecution under the statute, and that to allow a determination whether or not that deportation proceeding didn't comport was fundamentally unfair. If you're deported to a country that's 1,100 miles from your own home, and you have no means to get there, maybe that's procedurally unfair.
Well,
maybe,
that certainly is not this case.
Well, I think it is, Your Honor. I think that he wasn't.
You're saying he's deported. He ends up in Mexico. He wants to be in El Salvador. So because he can't get to El Salvador, he came back into the United States. Is that your argument?
He came back into the United States. Yes, because.
Well, why didn't he go to the American consulate or something and say, "Look, you ordered me deported to El Salvador, but you've dumped me in Mexico, and I want to go back to El Salvador."
I think there might have been evidence of that. It wasn't produced at the actual trial.
That's a big weakness for you if you don't have any evidence that he... I mean, the hypothetical case you give isn't bad, you know. Sent thousands of miles away, you don't know what to do, so you come back to the United States. That I understand that, but there isn't any evidence to suggest that that exceptional circumstance might argue for a statutory exception.
I would just make another hypothetical to the court. What if the executive branch...
Well, how about evidence?
I just want to point to this, if I might, Judge. What if they decided to take people who were deported and take them outside the territorial waters of the United States and drop them into the ocean? And... Then they float back to the United States.
No, I that would be a terrific case for you. I agree. Absolutely.
But
the problem is you didn't present any evidence that would make his case even remotely comparable.
But the point is that just leaving the territorial borders of the...
Well, I understand. You've got a perfectly good case. The hypothetical on the other side is just the wise guy who, having been ordered deported, goes somewhere else, then comes back and says, "Well, you know, you didn't deport me to my country of origin, therefore I'm back," and the statute doesn't apply. That's an equally absurd the other way. And what you need is evidence that Sanchez somehow is closer to your hypothetical than my hypothetical.
Didn't he know that he was going to Mexico?
No, he did not know. The order of deportation.
No. He's on a plane, right, or a bus. Right.
Correct.
He would have been flown
probably,
right,
to the border and walked across. I think that was the evidence.
Okay, so
flown to a port city such as Laredo or McAllen, okay, and then walked across through the custody of department.
So he thinks that the next country is El Salvador.
Judge, I don't know in that circumstance what an individual is supposed to do. He's in the custody of the U.S. law enforcement. He's being taken out of the country. they're not going to stop the deportation, say you're deporting me to the wrong country. In fact, the judge there eliminated all questioning. There was questioning about this by the case agent, Agent Sandifer.
And I'm curious about that. Why were you presenting this as a fact issue for the jury instead of a law issue to the judge?
Well, I think that our Seventh Circuit has said that there was no decision about whether this has to be presented in a Rule 12b-6 motion or not. I think that's the case of...
That this would have been a jury determination whether the deportation was correct?
That it wasn't a proper deportation, or it might not have been artfully...
That's a legal question.
It might not have been artfully presented. It could have been also...
But that's a legal question. The jury can't decide what the statute means.
Well, I think you can argue that one of the elements of the offense was that it was deported. You can argue that he wasn't.
You can't argue to a jury what constitutes deportation.
Judge, it might not have been artfully presented. You also could have said that.
It's not a question of artfully presented. It's improper. You don't ask juries to decide pure issues of law.
Judge, what he also could have been presented was that you might find that he meet the elements of the violation of 8 U.S.C. 1326, but exceptional circumstances could have existed. There could have been another type of jury instruction frame consistent with the Supreme Court's opinion.
Whether there are exceptional circumstances, that's a question of law. Is there an exceptional circumstance defense here? That's a question of law.
And I think,
does the statute have sufficient play to allow, you know, like you're hypothetical about the ocean? That's a legal question. You could say to the jury, look, the statute says this, but on the other hand, in exceptional circumstances, you're allowed to find that the deportation was ineffectual.
Correct.
Right. That can be presented to the jury, but that has to be the judge telling the jury what the statute means and therefore what they can do.
I think that they were trying to elicit evidence through the agent of that type, which
well,
was
they didn't give the they didn't ask for the instruction that would make that evidence relevant to anything.
Your Honor, they were completely stopped when the questioning started regarding.
If you're stopped, then you say to the judge, you know, I disagree. I'm going to reserve this as an appellate issue. You have to instruct the jury. That's how you handle it.
Well, at that, what I would say to that, Your Honor, is that once the questioning started about the circumstances of the deportation, meaning that he should have been deported to El Salvador, trial counsel was immediately admonished in no uncertain terms about why he didn't present this via pretrial motion, that he takes him by surprise. It was almost a contemptuous type of situation, Your Honor. And the testimony did come out that he was deported to the wrong country. And
you can't handle that way.
Well, I think there was...
It's just impermissible.
Your Honor, and you
this
think...
This is impermissible. You don't ask a jury to decide a legal issue.
Judge, I don't think it was...
Look, that's enough.
Okay, thank you, Judge.
Mr. Sterling?
May it please the Court, Michael Sterling on behalf of the United States of America. The District Court properly denied the defendant's request to argue to the jury the legally irrelevant fact that the defendant was deported or removed to Mexico instead of El Salvador, thus not deported or removed for the purposes of a 1326A prosecution. The defendant cited no precedent to support that argument. Moreover, that contention is directly at odds with the governing statutory definition of what constitutes deportation and removal under the statute. In Title 8 United States Code, Section 1101G, the governing definitional statute for immigration law states that an alien deported or removed from the United States shall be considered to have been deported or removed in pursuance of law, irrespective of the source from which his expenses were defrayed or to the place of which he departed.
Suppose he'd been placed on what the agents thought was a bus to Laredo, but the bus was actually going to Texas. Would his argument work then?
That he was never properly deported from the United States? Mm-hmm. Your Honor, it seems that argument would work, that in that case, if he stayed in Texas and he was never actually taken across the border, under the plain meaning of the statute, you have to have left the country. It seems that he would never have been properly deported or removed. And the proper thing in that situation would have been to just reinstate the deportation order if he was caught and then properly deport him to the right country.
Well, how about Mr. Tunick's example of the person who's taken out beyond the 3-mile limit and then he's dropped overboard, maybe with a life preserver, and he floats back to the United States?
Yeah, and it would seem to me that a defendant in that particular case would have a defense of necessity. There would be some sort of legal and factual assertion that he could assert a defense of necessity. In this case, the defendant didn't have that defense available to him. There were other options, as Your Honor pointed out, where he could have...
I think you're saying not that that there's no evidence that would suggest he was somehow had no choice but to return to the United States, right? I mean, what if, some gang comes up to him and says, we're going to kill you because you're not a real Mexican, and flees across the border of the United States? So that presumably would be a necessity situation.
Correct, Your Honor. There was nothing proffered.
But there's no evidence of that.
There was nothing proffered at the lower court to determine why he actually came back from Mexico to
the
United States.
You will admit, I hope, that this is it was a very unfortunate set of circumstances.
Certainly, Your Honor.
To be left in a strange country, probably without any money, 1,100 or 1,200 miles away from your home.
Certainly, Your Honor, the government concedes that the immigration officials should have deported him in accordance with the deportation order, that this was an unfortunate situation.
Does he get any sort of damages for this kind of error? Like room and board for a night? I mean, even the airlines will give you.
I'm not sure, Your Honor.
A hotel, if they drop you off in Milwaukee when you were supposed to be dropped off in Los Angeles.
I'm not sure, Your Honor, but there's also nothing proffered at the lower court to demonstrate that the defendant even objected to being deported to Mexico rather than El Salvador. And I would just, if there are no further questions, would just ask that the United States of America respectfully request that the conviction and sentence of the defendant be affirmed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sterling.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Tunick, your time ran out, but you can have another minute if you'd like.
Your Honor, I just would like to add that in the Coronado Navarro case, the case decided by our Seventh Circuit, the court specifically declined to address whether a collateral attack on the prior deportation matter had to be made by pretrial motion. There was a trial in the Coronado Navarro case, and our court, it was Justice Romner who wrote the opinion.
We're judges. This is not the Illinois Appellate Court.
Wait,
you might like
justice.
That promotion.
I like the sound of that.
I'm sorry. Justice Romner wrote the opinion that we need not decide if such a challenge must be made by pretrial motion pursuant to 12b-2. So clearly there was an avenue or an open door whether or not this could be done at a trial. Because in this case, declined to say that it had to be made by pretrial motion. And so I think counsel was right to try and explore it at a trial in light of the Seventh Circuit's prevailing law at the time.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Tunick. And you were appointed, were you not? So we thank you for your vigorous efforts on behalf of your client. We thank Mr. Sterling also. We're going to take a very brief break before we hear the last two arguments.